From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, July 27th, 2017. And on this day, big state funding cuts for 15 school-based health centers for kids who don't otherwise have access to health care. And we'll have reaction to President Trump's ban on transgender people in the military and more from longtime civil rights advocate Mary Bonato. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
State funding for Maine's 15 school-based health centers has been eliminated. The health centers landed on the chopping block after the new state budget cut $10 million to Centers for Disease Control programs over the next 2 years. As Patty White reports, that is raising concerns that students will have no way to get health care.
The school-based health center in Calais is one place where middle and high school students could be deeply affected by the cuts. Superintendent Ronald Jenkins says roughly 80% of students are eligible for services.
The majority of them do at some time over the course of the year receive some version of medical, dental, psychological. We do suicide and alcohol drug prevention services through the health center. And yes, indeed, we do services around sex education.
Given the location in rural Washington County, Jenkins says having a health center at school provides critical access to health care.
Many of the students that we serve would unlikely have services through any other entity.
The school health center in Calais is now facing a $46,000 loss, about one-third of its annual funding, and Jenkins is worried about its future. He's not alone. Portland Public School Superintendent Javier Botana says at least 1,000 students rely on the city's four school health centers.
They don't have insurance or they don't have a medical provider that they're associated with, or they are in family situations where they might not get the health care that they need.
Botana says he's working with Greater Portland Health, which provides the school-based health services, to try to plug the $180,000 gap in state funding. In Lewiston, Joan Churchill of Community Clinical Services, which operates four health centers in Lewiston and Auburn schools, is facing a $200,000 loss. She's worried she'll be forced to cut medical services and only provide behavioral health care.
We are hoping like crazy that we will be able to provide as much behavioral health counseling as the schools need.
The timing is terrible, says Churchill. The community is grappling with recent suicide of a middle school student, and she can't help but notice that the cuts are happening even though Maine just ended the fiscal year with a more than $100 million budget surplus.
It's a sad day when we cut these programs all across the state and we have such a significant surplus in 1 year.
You know, we're forced to make compromises in order to get a budget done, especially this year.
That's Representative Drew Gattin, a Democrat from Westbrook, who co-chairs the state's Appropriations Committee. Gattin says the LePage administration initially sought $130 million in cuts to the Department of Health and Human Services, and the legislature was successful in preventing many of them. They preserved Head Start programs, as well as Maine Care services for young adults and low-income families. They also prevented rate cuts for mental health services.
I think we were able to do a lot of really good things within the DHHS budget. These particular cuts, to school-based services are really the exception. But that doesn't mean that, you know, it's not incredibly upsetting and painful for the people who are going to be impacted.
DHHS spokeswoman Samantha Edwards says school-based health centers account for more than $1 million of the $10 million the department will cut from the Centers for Disease Control over the next 2 years. In an email, Edwards says instead of making across-the-board cuts to every program, DHHS kept some contracts whole, including substance use, tobacco, and obesity prevention. The department, she says, will assist schools in finding alternative funding.
And I'm open to looking at all kinds of different funding options.
Rebecca Reynolds is the director of the school-based health center at Marana Cook Community School in Readfield. She says the health center set aside funding a few years ago to plan for something like this. But she says other health centers will have more immediate struggles.
When a student isn't healthy, they can't learn. And so this is going to be detrimental to some of these communities.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Bids are in for several large-scale clean electricity projects that could influence New England's energy landscape and maybe its physical landscape for decades. Developers are competing to bring massive amounts of renewable energy through northern New England down to the region's biggest electricity consumer, Massachusetts. And as Fred Bever reports, who wins or loses could have a big effect on Maine's energy future.
Last year, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker signed a bill calling for the procurement of enough electricity generated by land-based renewable resources to power some 180,000 Bay State homes for 15 to 20 years. This week, developers submitted bids to serve that load from a grab bag of non- and low-polluting resources, from wind energy, solar energy, and hydropower to large-scale industrial batteries. For environmental advocates such as Peter Shattuck of the Acadia Center, a regional group focused on decarbonizing the economy, it all looks pretty good.
It's been a sticking point in the region that we know we need more clean energy, and this should really give a boost to developers and to the growth of the clean energy market.
Just as important as how the energy is created is how it is delivered, and for northern New England, the stakes are pretty high. That's because most of the land-based renewable wind and hydro resources Massachusetts is looking for could be located either in northern New England or Canada or both. There are at least five bids for major new transmission lines to bring that energy southward, from a line running under Lake Champlain in Vermont to routes in New Hampshire and western Maine that go both over and underland to an undersea cable off the coast. And in Maine, wind energy development has stalled after years of growth because the transmission system here has reached its limit for interconnecting major new generation sources to the regional power grid. A bid by Central Maine Power, says CMP's CEO Sarah Burns, could change the picture.
If we win one of these and we build this, I'm going to call it platform, then the next solutions are easier because we've created at least one stronger line.
CMP's proposals rely on a new transmission line on existing corridors and rights of way that stretch 145 miles from Beatty Township on the Canadian border through the Forks and Lewiston to a line that already links to New Hampshire. On the generation side, one CMP plan would simply sluice electricity from Canada's Hydro-Québec down to Massachusetts. Another would supply wind energy and storage from large industrial batteries developed in western Maine by a company called NextEra. Although CMP has recently opposed a program that incentivizes the build-out of residential solar arrays in Maine, the NextEra projects would include a 150-megawatt commercial solar farm, which alone would more than quadruple the state's solar energy output. And Byrne says there would be other benefits for Maine.
First of all the communities we go through, they'll have a tax base impact, so positive to the tax base. Second, because we're going to deliver into Lewiston, for Maine, you're going to have a compression of energy prices. The estimate right now annually is it will have about a $40 million impact on prices.
Plus, construction jobs. Of course, every project across the region has benefits to pitch, both to local stakeholders and to the Massachusetts regulators and utilities that will award the contracts. One project with Maine connections is being proposed by an affiliate of the Nova Scotia-based parent company of Emera Maine. It's called the Atlantic Link, and it would place a 375-mile high-voltage subsea cable along the coast, making a direct line between wind and hydropower projects in eastern Canada to Plymouth, Mass.
You know, the concept's been around for a while, connecting Atlantic Canada and New England.
Emera spokesman Gerald Wasine says the project's unique pathway would add diversity to the regional energy supply, accessing renewable power sources that right now have no way to get to New England. And, he adds, it would improve the grid's reliability.
For example, if there's large storms and you've got a subsea cable, it's likely to be less affected by harsh winter weather.
He says Emera is working with stakeholders in Maine, including lobstermen, fishermen, and shipping concerns, to make sure the offshore route would be compatible with their activities. That's the kind of challenge that all the proposals face, including in New Hampshire and Vermont, where residents, politicians, and regulators will all need to weigh the costs and benefits of serving southern New England's growing demand for renewable energy. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Longtime civil rights advocate Mary Bonato says her organization, GLAAD, will file suit if President Trump moves forward with his ban against transgender people serving in the military. The president tweeted his announcement of the ban yesterday. Then this morning, news broke that the U.S. Justice Department has filed a brief in a New York employment rights case that would challenge employment discrimination protection based on sexual orientation. Jennifer Rooks spoke with Mary Bonato today about both developments. She started by asking Bonato if she was surprised by the tweet about the transgender ban.
Yes, I was. I was surprised by the transgender ban. The policy was announced the policy would change. They had evaluated the fact that there had been so many transgender service members who had served with valor, willing to give their lives for their nation in the most patriotic way. The military is focused on readiness. There were studies that were commissioned by the military, by the RAND Corporation, saying this works. And so as a result of that, up to like about 15,000 people came out as transgender. And now there's a threat of those people being removed from the military.
Have you been hearing from transgender people who are serving in the military since that tweet? And if so, what are you hearing from them?
Yes, we are hearing both from people who are in the process of enlistment, and we want to hear from more of them. We are also hearing from people who are in the military who are now wondering if they're going to remain welcome there. And frankly, we think an exclusion of this nature is discriminatory. We plan to file suit.
Let's talk about the other news. How important is this news? Is this Justice Department brief in this one New York case?
Well, we've been winning many of these cases in recent times, and particularly the whole Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which is not exactly a liberal circuit, recently ruled that they were going to overturn previous precedents and accept the theories that were advanced because they're correct. So this brief takes aim at the Second Circuit. The Second Circuit just recently issued an opinion saying, okay, we're bound by our precedents, but we want to have our full court, everybody, participate. And that's what this next case is. The brief was just filed in. So the Second Circuit, which covers New York, Vermont, and Connecticut, is now hearing that issue. So this is important because, of course, this is our national government essentially saying that discrimination against some people is permissible, even though there are definitely very legitimate arguments for saying why sexual orientation and gender identity should be covered as because of sex. But anyway, that position is going to get sorted out in courts. And I feel actually quite strongly that these arguments are sound. And, you know, the DOJ can weigh in. It's, you know, right to do so. But I think they're wrong, and I think we're going to have the better of the argument.
Mary Bonato, the guest today on Maine Calling. You can hear the program tonight at 8 in our rebroadcast on Maine Public Radio. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, July 27th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.